This episode is sponsored in part by Swim. Okay, here's a depressing stat. 70% of shoppers who want your products never actually buy them. They browse, they consider, then they forget. That's revenue walking out the door. Swim Wishlist Plus turns browsers into buyers. Customers save products they want, get notified when prices drop or items restock. You can also engage them in personalized fashion through your marketing or sales outreach. It's like having a personal shopper reminding them to come back and buy from you instead of your competitors. And 45,000 stores already use it, and it only takes 5 minutes to install. You could try it free today for 14 days. Go to getswim.com/Kurt. That's swimwithay.com/Kurt. Turn those maybe laters into sales today. Getswim.com. So I want to talk to you today about survey questions. Okay, not the most exciting topic, but think about it this way. Right? On your Shopify store, you want to know, hey, how did a person hear about you? Or rather, how did they think they heard about you? Right? And a post-purchase survey that happens right in the checkout on the order confirmation page, that thank you page, that could be a good place to do it. And certainly there are methods and apps that'll do this. And if you figure that out, after a while, you go, well, maybe there's some other questions we should ask. And you could get some really good info this way by just really asking people one question at a time when they're most excited, you know, they just placed the purchase. But if you were the guy in charge of the app doing the survey questions, oh my, you would have access to a lot more information here. And you would probably have thoughts and opinions on the answers to those surveys and, you know, the larger approach to the survey questions themselves. And that's what today's episode is about. We are going to be joined by Matt Barr from Faring, a post-purchase survey and attribution app. We'll let him tell you about it. I'm your host, Kurt Elster. This is the unofficial Shopify podcast. Let's get into it. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Super excited to be here. This is I feel like this is a huge Shopify ecosystem milestone, is joining you on the pod.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. The, you know, labor of love for, man, over 10 years now.
Crazy. Yeah, I was looking back at how long I was actually going to ask you. I thought it was like 2014, 2013.
2014, yeah. You have this app in the Shopify App Store, Faring. What's it do?
Yeah, so Faring is a post-purchase survey app. We ask questions on the thank you and order status page. Arguably the only moment in time where you have your customers most concentrated kind of focus. They just entered their credit card. They are making sure their order went through. And then on that surface, we can ask questions. And one of the real value props of post-purchase surveys compared to kind of surveys that most people are used to, which are email-based and you do them periodically, is since we have that customer's attention, the response rates are like 10x higher than you're used to. So the company that we're building at Faring kind of has that at our core. Is we think about survey data different than, let's say, a SurveyMonkey does, because the volume and completion rate is so high. We kind of position ourselves more of like a data company, where how do we normalize all of this? How do we take this data that's kind of ever flowing after every purchase and help merchants make better decisions in real time? So that's our core focus. We don't serve questions in other places. I think eventually maybe we probably will in email and kind of these other environments that people are used to, but we've tested them and the response rates are just so low. It doesn't allow us to really provide a lot of value in the actual data that's being captured. You're more of like just a collection tool at that point. So
when did you launch this app?
So we launched Faring in May of 2018. So it was May 8th, 2018. We used to be called Enquire for the first few years. And the initial kind of reason for Faring was actually we weren't focused on building a survey app. We were actually focused on building a product, a B2B SaaS in the same day delivery space. And so I was a merchant for about 7 years before this. I've always been in e-commerce. At the last company, Master and Dynamic, that I was at, that Kurt, you're familiar with.
Master Dynamic makes quality headphones.
Yeah, exactly. We were one of the first brands in New York, actually after Everlane, to integrate with Postmates API at Master and Dynamic. And at the time, I was just enamored with the fact that somebody could put in their credit card information, click same day delivery, and within a couple hours, they have their e-commerce transaction at their door. Obviously, very pie in the sky. Uber Rush and Postmates were definitely leading all efforts on that side. So I went out, I left Mastering Dynamic really to build a company in the same day delivery space. And my co-founder and I spent about 18 months doing that. We started off as a consumer app for about like 3 months before we were like, we're not consumer marketers who are going to push app downloads. There's too much kind of difficulty in the marketplace aspects of this. And we pivoted to a B2B SaaS. And we got to about $3,000 or $4,000 in monthly revenue. But every dollar was like excruciatingly hard to get. We ended up, I think we were charging $500 a month and we had like 8 customers and it was just, the things weren't going well. And one of those customers was a handbag company that's still around in New York called Kara Sport. I was more or less advising him on go-to-market kind of P&L strategies. And he was doing a ton of influencer gifting. And he kept coming to me and be like, we're like gifting so much product, but I like, it's not working. Like no one's using the promo code or the URL in the LinkedIn profile. Like, what do I do? The only way, or wasn't even thinking about building a product. I was just like, oh, just go out a survey on the thank you page. I definitely Googled like improve influencer attribution. And I was like, oh, this makes sense. And we did so with a Google form. He ended up coming back a few months later. This was awesome. And I was like, why doesn't something exist here? So that was really the start. That was all 2017. And then in March of 2018, I turned to my co-founder. I was like, how about we take like 2 or 3 weeks, just a break from kind of like grinding on the same day stuff and build a survey app. And here we are today.
And well, so I love that it's a pivot story, right? You're like, you had this brilliant idea, but you know, as far as like that being, you know, first app, that's tough. I mean, it's such a tough idea.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that you figured out to go with something simpler, pivot to that, and then go, all right, we're going to go all in on this. With that survey app, so what really made surveys take off, at least, you know, from my perception, is iOS 14.5, which yep. I think is spring 2021 is when this comes out.
Yeah, April.
Yeah. And when that happens, now suddenly attribution gets a little fuzzier. And so we want solutions. And that's when I really saw, you know, interest in these post-purchase survey apps jump, because you could, you know, help solve that problem by saying, hey, how'd you hear about us? Well, yep. That's your attribution.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We ended up shutting down the same day product, I think in September of 2018, really because we started having some momentum with Faring, which was like really exciting to see. But we were a side project until like summer, fall of 21. We had, I think, 500 or 600 merchants using us. At the time we were charging, I don't know what it was, probably like $20 a merchant or something. We were like checking our goal of like, we want this to pay for beats, pizza and beers. And then yeah, iOS 14, TikTok as well. That was kind of summer. I think the first response was the summer or fall of 21. So started to get some really good signals of like, okay, not everything is as easy to measure as Meta with like the changing landscapes from browsers and other platforms.
With your experience in attribution, I want to know where do you think most stores go wrong when they're trying to figure out where their customers come from?
Yeah, there's definitely like the biggest sign is usually either it's usually a one size fits all approach to attribution. Is definitely the first red flag. The second, which we still see surprisingly, is teams that are still allocating a lot of their dollars based on last click. So they're looking at GA4, mainly GA4, a little bit of Shopify, and being like, oh, these are where our conversions are coming from. This is how I'm gonna allocate my media.
What's wrong with that? No, really, tell it. Like, what's
yeah, so it's great
and
for
on the surface. That's like, okay, yeah, that seems like how I should do it. I have Shopify Analytics. I probably have Google Analytics. That can't tell me.
Yep. Yeah. So your lower funnel, if we think of the path to purchase, most paths to purchase require more than one touch point. So you might see an ad or you have a demand for something, you Google it, you find the product, you wait a couple hours or a day or whatever that time lag ends up being, and then you go purchase. Before you're purchasing, you're most likely going to Google the brand that you already kind of found and made the decision to buy from, or you're going to wait for an email and click. Like these are all bottom of funnel channels. And those are the channels, if you're using last click attribution, that are going to appear in Shopify or Google Analytics. So those channels inherently are very difficult to scale. for the main reason of like, you need to generate the demand so that your branded search, those lower funnel channels, you can actually put more money into. So that's the main reason of kind of why to avoid a last click model. I know like Shopify definitely like shows it now. It's the easiest thing to track, but it's not going to help you allocate that budget into the channels that are really driving the demand creation and that top of funnel awareness for your brand.
And so what's the myth here? Like, what's the one thing, the one myth about attribution that you want people to take away?
Yeah, the biggest myth is it's not one size fits all. I think the thought that you can deploy one measurement methodology or attribution measure methodology and you're set for all of your channels just is not going to work. So if the ads that you're running on this podcast, for example, are going to be measured differently than a Facebook ad or word of mouth, like, hey, how viral is our product? All of these different channels that drive new customers to your store, you need to think about the channels. You want to think about them collectively with how you're measuring your mix and how you're allocating that budget. But each channel does require a different methodology. There's obviously some overlap. There's platforms that do a few of them. But that's definitely what we see is like very like brands set in their ways where it's like, we just use XYZ platform and that is our whole stack. So that's probably the biggest kind of myth. The other point is, and this doesn't necessarily happen until brands scale, let's call it maybe above 5 million on the low end, is like proper measurement does require investment. It does require capital. It does require learning. It does require experimentation. And I think a lot of brands are hesitant to put dollars in there, but like, what is that kind of measurement tax that you're okay spending to understand if like these dollars are actually driving new customers or not? So those are kind of the two things, at least, that we talk about or come up often in calls that we have with merchants that we try to kind of steer them in the right direction as quickly as possible.
And when people come, you know, show up looking for a solution like Faring, they're like, hey, I want to do post-purchase surveys. Is this usually the reason? Because I could ask any number of things. But is it usually like, hey, where'd you come from?
Yeah, exactly. That's always like 99% of the time that is the entry into the conversation with Faring. And that's why as a company, we're very much focused on attribution and measurement. Like, we have a data science team. But we're a survey company. And it's really because we understand that the data is really the inherent value here. And like, how do we do things to increase the value of that versus like the horizontal SaaS strategy? But yeah, 99% of the time it is something attribution related. And it's usually like, hey, I just started, we're about to do a $20,000 podcast buy. It's our first ever foray outside of Meta. And I want to make sure that I have at least the proper infrastructure set up to know if it worked or didn't.
Yeah. And podcast is an example. It's just podcast analytics and attribution inherently difficult, right? Because it's, in a way, it is air gapped. I hear the ad, right? I listen to it, but I'm probably, when you talk to people, like, oh yeah, I listen to you while I walk my dog or I do my dishes, that kind of thing. And so it's just up to them to later remember it, look it up. Like, there's no cookieing, there's no links. It's very difficult.
And a lot of brands rely on promo code usage, but we know how easy it is to get a promo code on most Shopify stores now with like entering your email or phone number at sign up. That's arguably like an easier process for the consumer than to remember or go reference, God forbid, reference what the code was from the creator or the podcast host. So yeah, definitely a tricky problem to solve.
And so with this post-purchase solution, obviously I can ask other questions beyond attribution. That just seems to be the entry point. If I have to ask a single question in my post-purchase survey, is it still, you know, how'd you hear about us, or is there a different question you would do?
Yeah, so we would definitely recommend that. We recommend splitting the new versus returning customers. So asking new customers a different question than to returning customers. So a returning customer, you don't want to ask them, how did you hear about us? It might be their fifth order, but still very helpful to know, like, hey, it was the email that was sent or whatever triggered that purchase. So we recommend, we think of these kind of as like one question. They're just different wording for different types of customers. So those returning customers will get what led you to XYZ, like skims.com. And those new customers will get, hey, how did you hear about Skims? So that's typically what we recommend. The only caveat to that, though, is if a brand is just spending on Meta, let's say, like literally just Facebook, Instagram, that's it. Maybe a little bit of word of mouth, and that's their channel makeup. Like, a product like Faring isn't going to be super helpful when it comes to attribution because you're not going to see huge changes there.
It's going to tell you what you already know.
Exactly. Like, so maybe you'll confirm a hypothesis that you have. It could introduce new channels. Like, let's say you are getting mentioned by influencers, so it could help you understand what the next channel could be. But if you're dead set on like, hey, we're a small brand, we're a couple hundred thousand in GMV, we're not looking to diversify channels yet, which we wouldn't recommend doing unless there's kind of edge cases with different verticals of brands. But if you're small, like, you might get more value with asking questions like, hey, why did you buy today? Or something that really understands the consumer psychology that then you can use in creative on the meta side. So it does differ, but I'd say anyone over like $750, $1 million in GMV, like, that attribution question is going to deliver them.
Here's some customer service emails you don't want to wake up to. I was drunk. This was a gift, but we broke up. Wrong color, wrong size, wrong me. Sound familiar? With Cleverific, you don't have to deal with these anymore. Cleverific gives your customers a self-service portal to edit their own orders. No emails, no back and forth, just simple fixes. Fewer support tickets, faster fulfillment, and happier customers. Peter Manning New York slashed their order support request by 99%. You can too. Get 50% off the Cleverific Pro plan, just $49 a month, exclusively for the Unofficial Shopify podcast listeners. Go to cleverific.com/unofficial and use promo code KURT50. Fix the problem before it's a problem. That's Cleverific. There are some survey questions I like, you know, and I've not necessarily done much with post-purchase attribution other than attribution, you know, just like, hey, let's verify where people think they're hearing about this. I had not occurred to me that I could do customer segmentation and do new versus returning. That's interesting. You know, that definitely expands the utility of this survey. But for survey questions in general, kind of some of my favorites, if you were to recommend this to a friend, how would you describe it? That's like, let's verify our positioning, because how we talk about a product's not going to be how the customer does. And that's what's valuable, is how they talk about it. I want to uncover that customer language. Like, so if you were to recommend this to your friend, who, what kind of person are they? How would you describe this? Yeah, you know, I like those two a lot, because then, you know, how would you describe your friend is really a better way to ask, how do you see yourself?
So a little bit of a sidebar. One of my favorite interview questions is how would your coworkers describe yourself? Which is like a totally reframing that kind of gets you to like tell us about yourself, but in the eyes of someone else, and you get a little bit more honest feedback.
Yeah, because otherwise it's like, oh, well, you know, I'm 42, I'm a dad, you know, I use the blow dryer too much. Versus it's like, well, what kind of person would you describe to this be? It'd be like, oh, yeah, like a real techie who's into gadgets. Yeah. Like it definitely changes how you picture it.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of changes. You're not getting like their elevator pitch on themselves. You're getting a more practical description. Another one I really like is I want to uncover objections. How, and I'll do this with exit intent survey. Like, oh, if you didn't make a purchase today, why not? You know, and then because it's anonymous, you get like some of the most insane answers, but it's fun. You can uncover stuff you may not have known otherwise. With a post-purchase survey, they've already purchased. Yeah, can I still uncover objections with this?
Yeah, we have a question templates in app that has a few versions like these. We call these like conversion rate optimization questions. It's like trying to understand buyer intent and what stopped people. So there's a phrasing of a question of like, hey, what almost prevented you from buying today? Typically, it's like price or something like that. The questions that we love are more so in the sense of like, how was your shopping experience today? Brands, even small brands, but brands are doing a lot of volume, like ask a question like that and they get this endless stream. It's like a to-do list of things to improve the front end. So that's definitely, I would argue, more valuable than kind of the what almost stopped you, but just like asking blanketed CRO type questions that build that to-do list on the digital product side of things to improve.
Okay. I like that. Are there other customer, well, okay, how are brands actually implementing this stuff? My issue, you know, I see apps, I see Faring, I see apps like it installed, and then I never hear about it, which is telling. You know, it's like, okay, you've got it installed, you used it, you probably forgot about it. Now, no, you're not actually doing anything with it. It's not the app's fault. How are, you know, what are recommendations for brands to maybe ask, you know, different questions that'll be more active, you know, provide more active advice, or is there a different process? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so we have five different question buckets. First one's attribution and measurement, understanding channels, time lag, time to buy, all those things. The second one is personalization and segmentation. So this is my, for ignoring attribution, this is definitely my favorite types of questions to ask, which are questions that help you suss out the buyer persona. So my favorite is like, which of these best describes you? This question is so much easier, if I'm being honest, in non-fashion. Fashion is historically very difficult to build a persona that then you could put in front of a customer. Mention like products sold to techies. It's like, are you a hobbyist or a professional? It's like a very easy binary of like, where does this fit? As far as how to use that data, you can use Faring or any of these other tools and send this data directly to Klaviyo or your ESP. And now you have this beautiful data point for CRM segmentation. So it's like, hey, let's stop talking to this customer like they're a professional and they do this for their job. And let's talk to them more like a hobbyist. Let's look at the LTV between the difference of two. Like, are they different types of buyers? So that's usually like the biggest layup if you can find an easy question. It's definitely more difficult, again, in fashion. We used to work with a brand that was selling, it was a dirt bike, like car wash liquid, like soap to wash your dirt bike.
Knock off.
I don't remember the name of it.
I used to work at a bike store, and a similar product would be this thing called Muck Off. Essentially, it's like detailing gear for your bike, and I love detailing brands. So okay, go ahead.
I could talk to you a while about that. Their core customer is actually not a dirt bike rider. It was someone with a family who had a bunch of ATVs, like very different buyer persona, but all of their ads were of dirt bikes and kind of the creative that goes along with that, not like, hey, wash your Polaris or your ATV that you have. So just that learning alone, those tweaks, it's like, that's how you get better ROAS in your meta campaigns. It's like, hey, let's actually talk to these buyers based on kind of their persona. So there's a lot of learning with that personalization question. The CRO one is obviously always interesting. That's definitely the highest leverage one that people discount or they're like least excited about it, let's say, in our
onboarding. Oh, they're so wrong.
They're just like, okay, we'll add this. I'm always like, add it to the end. Like, it's not going to, you have three or five questions, whatever it is, it's not going to interfere with anything. But that question ends up being like just straight gold. And we have like a few very large customers, doing a couple million orders a month who I know like that is their most exciting part of Faring is the endless inflow of CRO related, data points that they get every day.
I love all these questions. I've enjoyed the discussion here. But what I'm curious about is some of the meta knowledge that you carry, right? Surely you have access to larger trends and patterns because you're seeing, you know, this data across many stores. Are you familiar? Well, and through that, we could figure out efficacy on some of these apps or like acquisition channels. So yep. It sounds, I mean, based on what you're saying, it sounds to me like meta is what will be like the number one in these attribution surveys?
From a volume perspective, yeah. Like Instagram and Facebook are still, so we're on about, it's between 15 and 20 million orders a month this time of year. Meta, like Facebook and Instagram are still the lion's share of responses, like over half. And that should be no surprise to anyone. Like we look at the allocation of channels, like most people, that's their highest grossing channel. And the reason being there is, Meta has over the years just developed like the largest data set identity graph on consumers. They're the best at finding like your next buyer. And they have really good probabilistic measurement. So it's in their best interest to like show you the most accurate conversion so that you keep investing or whatever that kind of asymptotally is where it's like the best ROAS where you do keep investing. So there's a little bit of a play there that they're obviously endlessly tweaking, but that is still the lion's share. And then there's a huge variance as far as what is third, on a per store basis. We have a few brands that like audio, like podcasts, I can think of a few who actually podcast is like their number one channel. So it does really run the gamut there as far as like what the distribution looks like after that kind of lion's share of a budget.
And what about Klaviyo? What about email in general?
Yeah. So email, we do see some merchants like add email to their, how did you hear about us? Which is like We obviously recommend adding it to the returning customers only because it's a bottom of funnel channel. So email is definitely a big source of returning customers as far as like, hey, what led you back? It's like, I got an email. But that's definitely where we recommend measuring that is for returning customers only. Same with SMS. Where we, like the best practice with Faring is like, how do we send better emails? It's less of how do we measure the ROI of emails.
And are you familiar with AppLovin?
I am. Yeah.
AppLovin. I think, you know, a lot of folks are probably not familiar with this yet. On Twitter, it's been a hot topic for, I don't know, a year now.
Yep.
But AppLovin ad network where they will run in-app ads for you. And as from what I could tell, they own a bunch of the apps, or, you know, it's like plus it's a network that'll place the apps. Just a lot of discussion about this. And we're always looking for, you know, like what's the new next channel? Because if you can get in early on a channel, you know, oftentimes it's like shooting fish in a barrel. And then later, you know, as it matures, like Meta has, it becomes more difficult. And so that's why I'm excited by the potential with AppLovin, but really don't have a ton of direct experience with it. Have you seen it popping up in these surveys? Do you know anything about it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's definitely driving like incremental. So one of the things that we do is when a new channel pops up, we actually don't recommend merchants add it to their survey for the first few days or first weeks, because what we're trying to understand is like, was this channel influential enough where a customer actually wrote into other that was where they discovered you? And that was like, we saw that with TikTok and we saw it with AppLovin, where brands that started to spend on AppLovin, they didn't change their survey, and all of a sudden like Candy Crush, Game Ad, et cetera, just like starts appearing in that other response field like crazy. So really good initial traction as far as, okay, this channel is driving net new customers here. So it started in about, I think September, October of last year is when brands started to really lean in. And we still see teams that are extremely bullish, leaning way in. I don't know if it's surpassing Meta and any spend. I know it was in Q4. Like there was definitely stories of brands who are spending more on AppLovin than Meta, which is like obviously going to own every headline in the kind of D2C go-to-market space. But definitely a channel to watch. We always get super excited. Like the first time we saw TikTok in a response was from Hero Cosmetics, I think in September of 2021. So we're tracking a lot of these things, and we get some early signal of what's working and what's driving net new customers. And yeah, AppLovin, I think we spoke about this before, but definitely caters more female, definitely more older demographic. And like, if that is your target and you're not investing in AppLovin or at least testing into it right now, I would go urge you to at least go take a look at it, because that is like their core user that they have access to. And we're seeing it perform really well in those demographics.
Isn't that also, even if that's not necessarily your audience, that's a big gift-giving demographic, isn't it?
Yeah, huge. If I had a brand that wasn't focused on that demographic, I would probably slow down on AppLovin all year, and then in Q4 just allocate all my budget, maybe starting in like mid-September as kind of a run-up to Q4. But I think that's why we saw a ton of kind of really high reported ROAS on AppLovin, was because it was November and December. It's a crazy amount of gift giving that happens in that time period. And we had brands that were really like totally different demographic, call it like 20s male, who were doing very well on AppLovin. And I think that's a really good reason, or at least understanding as to why. It was a lot of gift giving obviously happens in that time of year.
Yeah, my brands that have that gift giving audience, I emailed and was like, hey, you should probably consider AppLovin for these reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah. See what it does. Cause they're, you know, we're always looking for that next big acquisition channel.
And at least testing into it. Like AppLovin is great. Like what Google essentially invested is like, unlike let's say podcasts, unless you're doing a little bit of programmatic, which I would never really recommend anyone doing, you usually need at least call it 25, 30K to minimum to lean into audio to get enough signal to know if it's working, if you should keep reinvesting. In something like AppLovin, single device, hopefully path to purchase, Pixel, that stuff. Like you can definitely get pretty early signal early on and not have to spend that 25, 30 grand.
This episode is brought to you in part by Zipify One-Click Upsell. Hey, you still guessing which products to upsell? Yeah, look, that's how upsells worked like 5 years ago. But this year in 2025, that kind of guesswork, it's just losing you revenue. One-click upsell by Zipify uses AI to recommend the best upsells and cross-sells based on your actual sales data, live, in real time. Yeah, it's smart, automatic, and way more effective than the old school "I hope this works" method. So just install the app, launch your first upsell funnel with one click. No code, no testing, and no more generic offers. You can upsell across the entire customer journey, the whole funnel, product pages, cart, checkout, post-purchase, thank you pages, even the shop app. And now they're tossing in a free cart drawer just for installing. Cart drawer is the best. Over 50,000 Shopify merchants trust one-click upsell, and it's already driven nearly $1 billion in extra revenue. So go to zipify.com/Kurt to start your 30-day free trial. That's zipify.com/KURT. You know, I suspect one of the other slept-on channels is connected TV. Do you watch any streaming TV with ads like Pluto, anything like that?
Yeah, I'm definitely more of the Amazon Prime Video and getting all those ads. But yeah, connected TV is the channel I'm probably most excited about. And I think that's because the cost of creative is just dropping exponentially with the use of AI. So that's definitely like, I see a world, I think I wrote this on LinkedIn a couple weeks ago. It's like, I see a world where brands that are doing like 250, 300K in GMV, like being able to run TV because the creative cost is so low. Connected TV has opened up more programmatic buying. And now it's like almost analogous to buying media on Meta.
It sounds, right?
Yeah. So I'm like, that's probably the channel I'd be leaning the most in right now. If I'm like, because the audience is, we know it's massive. And it's definitely still being slept on by the majority of brands sub like 20 million. And with like attribution surveys, with some of the pixel-based IP address tracking they have, like you can get really good signal if you were to run even like a small spike test where it's like, let's just put like 5K into this channel. Like you'll see that pop out in a survey as long as your targeting is set up correctly. So yeah, definitely the one I'm most excited about. I've been thinking about this for weeks. I haven't like built any like fairing video ads on VO yet, but I'm like, I just need a few more minutes in the day.
VO being Google's AI video generation tool, which is really good.
Have you done anything on it yet? Or
I have used it one time total. I gave it a single prompt, and the prompt was generate a photorealistic street scene of a street takeover. This is a thing that hooligans do. And it needs to be like a social media video. Only the drivers and cars are Mario Kart.
Oh my God.
And so like I gave it a difficult prompt because you're like mixing realities here.
Yep.
I gave it the format I wanted. And I was like, you're going to use these, well, you know, trademark characters, like Nintendo, notoriously very protective of these things. So I gave it a hard one as the only prompt I've ever given it. It came back, it nailed it.
Oh, wow.
it looked like it was a portrait video. It was like cars in a circle in an intersection at night. And in the center was Mario on a cart doing donuts. It wasn't perfect, but at a glance, I was like, holy crap. I couldn't believe it.
Brands can do that today very easily, but like with the pace of this, like it's in a month, it's going to be quicker. The prompts are going to be easier. You'll be able to upload more brand creative, like creation, like the cost of creation is going to just drop so much for video. So I think we'll see network of like positive effects and on other channels too, where video performs well. I think it's a win for the net consumer because the videos will be more engaging. The creative will be better just from a cost perspective, maybe not at the top end where it already is really good. But that's definitely the channel that I'm most excited about as a person running Faring, but also as a consumer and former brand operator is video.
So we think AI powered creative is going to help stores stand out.
Yeah. The problem is every store is going to have it or already has it. So the ability to stand out is arguably going to get more difficult. Like I'm curious if we're just going to similar, I guess, on Meta, where you're like maybe creating like 50 videos with the hope of like one actually performing extremely well. I think we're going to see it everywhere. The other thing I'm excited about on the creative side is how, especially on connected TV, it's like, how does personalization change? It's a little bit more difficult because you have multiple consumers sitting in front of the TV and consuming that experience at once. But there is a world where like you and I get different video creative, and so does the thousands of other people. So personalization, a lot of these things can definitely, I think we're going to see huge changes here, but from a brand perspective, like, yeah, there's definitely opportunity now in leaning in, learning these things. I think a lot of the platforms that are promising like one-click AI creative are not there yet.
I could see it happening, but it is, you know, the results are a little hit or miss. And then, man, if you don't get, like, if it's obviously AI, you will get roasted in the comments. I mean, you can't, the comments on ads are like toxic as hell anyway.
Yeah.
But man, you don't want to invite it.
No, no. So I think we're, the pace of this, I think by Q4, this holiday season will be the place where brands start to really like deploy and use like totally AI creative.
Like as professionals, you were talking about like use AI to generate creative. Are customers, are end users using AI to find the products? Are you seeing like ChatGPT pop up as a referrer?
Yeah, we track that. So we just published, if anyone's curious, you can go to Faring and sign up for our monthly benchmarks for LLMs, but we're seeing crazy growth. I think it's like 15% last I checked of the merchants we work with, which are a few thousand plus stores, are seeing it. And there's definitely like the 80-20 rule where we're really seeing like supplement companies like just take off like crazy versus other verticals. So if we think about this, like ChatGPT is very like problem solution oriented right now, or fact checking. It's at least anecdotally not using it for maybe fashion advice just yet. So definitely some verticals we're seeing it. And the other thing to know is like ChatGPT is like, obviously it's turning into a verb in and of itself, but like their brand ownership is just, it's wild. It's like 80% of all LLM mentions in attribution surveys are ChatGPT.
Yeah, it's synonymous with it. It's true. Yeah. Strange, because there's other tools out there, like Google's got, we're just talking about it. It's great. Yep. There's Claude, which is phenomenal. I love Claude, but like—
I love Claude the most, and like they're not performing very well in the e-commerce kind of acquisition side. Funny enough, Grok is number two.
Grok.
Which like I've used it a couple of times, but that's definitely not like what I'm opening when I'm looking to go query one of these LLMs.
So I know you've worked with some big brands like Bombas, the socks, Thrive. Anything you gain from them about like, well, you know, these how the big boys do surveys well.
Yeah, I think all like those two as examples both have multiple questions. So we work with a few large brands that just care about attribution. And I think that's like a huge, they're not maximizing the value of their customer's attention when they're just asking one question on that thank you page. So brands like Bombas and Thrive kind of lean in. They're turning questions on and off periodically. They're kind of sampling it. Maybe that attribution hero question is kind of always the start of it, but they're in a meeting, someone asks a question and they're like, well, we could just turn this question on and at our scale, we could have an answer in an hour. Like we can get a couple hundred responses from our actual customers. So there, a lot of these larger brands are more dynamic in how they think about it. Also at their scale, like the CRO questions are obviously even more valuable. If you're able to catch like, hey, add to cart isn't working on iOS after our recent theme update. Like maybe all your tests passed, but you're going to see that in the CRO related question because someone just went to desktop and then they're going to complain about it there.
Oh, smart.
That's definitely the larger brands definitely get the biggest influx of CRO related data. That's extremely like real time and actionable. So those are probably the two things is like they ask a lot of questions. They're more dynamic with how they think about enabling and disabling their questions in their survey. And then they definitely lean on that CRO question to drive higher conversion rates.
Let's say you started your own Shopify store. It sells t-shirts. You're on month six. You're starting to sell with it. You have installed your own app. How do you configure it?
It's a great question. So I have, there's five different categories of questions that you can ask in Faring. So I'm definitely like checking one from each one. The first one is obviously, where are these customers coming from? If I kind of have some good momentum there. The second one, as I alluded to before, is how'd you describe yourself? I'm probably not one to like open a fashion brand personally, so I could probably just assume I can ask that question. Because that early, you're just trying to understand like, who is this customer? Like, what are my different, do I have one persona? Do I have five personas? Like, who am I selling to? The third category that we didn't talk about before is just general research, psychographic and demographic type questions. So it's anything from age and gender, anything that helps you understand kind of the more segmented aspect of like who these customers are. Pipe that all to Klaviyo, and then if I'm still a small brand, I'm maybe also managing my retention and CRM strategies. So really easy kind of setup, set and forget it flows in Klaviyo that send personalized emails. And then the last one, I would obviously have a question that's like, how was your shopping experience, or something that helps me at least get really good voice of customer feedback on what's happening before they click pay now.
All right, we got the strategy laid out by the man himself. So you've got an app you love. Recommend a single app that's not yours.
Yeah, it's a great question. My immediate thought would be Orita, mainly just because I know that team so well, so I'm going to be quite biased with my recommendation here. What they do is they help segment your CRM. So that's probably the app that's out right now. To take a little deviation on that question you had, the space within Shopify that I'm obsessed with is customer accounts. I wrote a blog post in 2020 about how brands should be like leaning into building beautiful customer accounts, get people to log in, offer them personalized experiences in the logged in state. It helps solve measurement problems. It helps solve conversion rate. And I think what Shopify is doing with customer accounts, and Patrick on that team,
Patrick Milligan. Yeah.
Yes. He's great. We see eye to eye on customer accounts. I want a future where every merchant, every experience I have as a consumer is a logged in state. There's no cookie identity tracking around personalization. It knows exactly who I am, exactly what I bought previously, and I get a personalized experience based on those things. So that's probably the area I'm most excited about that's not touching surveys. There, it's like, I think I joked to Patrick, I was like, is the future of a Shopify experience just like you go to your account and that's where all the merchandising and shopping happens, is like in this account? Obviously that got him excited, but I think it's such a better consumer experience. It's like, imagine if every time you went to Uber, it didn't know who you were. Every time you ordered food on Uber Eats, like it didn't know any of your preferences. I mean, that's kind of how we're merchants or consumers are shopping today.
So where can we get your app? Where do we find Faring?
Yeah, so you can get us directly in the App Store. Just type Faring in the App Store. You can also go to faring.co. To get in touch with me, I'm definitely posting a lot on LinkedIn. If anyone wants to chat, anything e-com related, marketing related, go-to-market, measurement related, you could ping me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to chat with other merchants.
Matt Barr, Faring, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kurt.
Crowdfunding campaigns are great. You can add social proof and urgency to your product pre-orders while reducing risk of failure. But with traditional crowdfunding platforms, you're paying high fees and giving away control, all while your campaign is lost in a sea of similar offers. It can be frustrating. That's why we built Crowdfunder, the Shopify app that turns your Shopify product pages into your own independent crowdfunding campaigns. We originally created Crowdfunder for our private clients, and it was so successful, we turned it into an app that anyone can use. Today, merchants using Crowdfunder have raised millions collectively. With Crowdfunder, you'll enjoy real-time tracking, full campaign control, and direct customer engagement. And it's part of the Built for Shopify program, so you know it's easy to use. So say goodbye to high fees and hello to successful store-based crowdfunding. Start your free trial and transform your Shopify store into a pre-order powerhouse today. Search Crowdfunder in the Shopify App Store to get started.